Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. And we have us on the line from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, our good friend John Leffler. Hi, John. How are you doing? John, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hello.
Well, anyway, John, as you know, those of you who listen to our programs regularly here in the Monterey Bay Area, has his own program. It's Steel on Steel, which we play the hour before we go on here in the evening, every Wednesday evening. He's heard across the nation. He's heard on Internet. And perhaps after you've heard him this evening, why you'll be anxious to get onto his Internet service and listen to him on a regular basis. But tonight we were going to talk about the high cost of gasoline and the fact that it is going to get higher. And, of course, we may differ a little bit on this. I think we will both agree that we've got a real problem because this is going to have a profound impact on the cost of everything we buy because it's all tied to transportation. Certainly it's going to have a increase the cost of air travel. It's going to increase the cost of driving our trucks, driving our recreational vehicles, even driving back and forth to work. It's going to become progressively more expensive. And the question is, why is this happening and what can we do about it? And with that as the background, I'm going to let John start out.
Absolutely nothing. Thank you for calling. Good night.
All right, fine. Well, let's get your thoughts on this, John.
Well, I had an interesting interview with Bill Powers this week from Canadian Energy Viewpoint for my show that you'll run on your station next week. And the interesting thing is Bill very accurately predicted the gas crossing over $2 a gallon and oil above $40 a barrel by summertime. So voila, here we are. And he was right. That's the good news. The bad news is, he said, it's heading for $50 a barrel within the next 18 months. And he said, don't think it's coming back. I mean, you know, right now I think the politicians are trying to convince you that this is a spike and that it's going to go, it'll settle back down in the fall. And he's saying, I don't think so. You know, this is, he's, you know, as we always do on the program, we sort of look for people who are maverick thinkers, those who can think on their own without going after the crowd, and that's what Bill is. And so basically he's saying it's gone north of 40, it's going to head north of 50, at least to 50, by within the next 18-month period, which of course is going to be reflected at the pump, and the high prices are here to stay. And the reason for that is, among other things, the age of cheap oil is over. Now, there's a lot of debate as to how much oil remains out in the reservoir. I saw an article that scientists are actually saying perhaps the oil is being renewed from sources we never thought, chemical processes going on inside the earth. Some say we have lots of oil. Some say we're out of oil. But one thing is pretty sure. One, we're out of cheap oil. And two, even if there were gobs of oil out there today, we couldn't bring it online fast enough to deliver it. You know, we talk about the reserves in Alaska. You heard all these conversations, Dr. Stan, right, about that. But and alternate sources of energy. Here's the problem so far. The alternate sources of energy are not up and running, and even if you were to, say, convert your house to solar, it takes a certain amount of time to do that, and it takes oil to make the products, the solar panels and everything else like that, to get it going. So what we're looking at over the short term, anyway, is what I call a crunch worldwide of cheap oil. And it'll just be like a cash flow crunch. It'll be an oil flow crunch. And all the big powers seem to know it. And it's not really the focus of conversation in the mainline media. I am so barf sick of what I see going on every night. It's really important stuff coming down. And they're talking about Kerry and this and that. The war in Iraq's going exactly the way Dr. Cuddy and most of us have said it would go. And we're sliding into, if you notice, we're now rattling our swords at Syria now. Very slowly the pressure's turning up, just like we said it would right on time. But the oil is the issue. The Chinese know it, the Russians know it, the Japanese know it, the Europeans know it, we know it.
But only the trouble is the average American really thinks we went to war over there because of Saddam Hussein was just about to attack New York City at any time, and if he couldn't attack us, he was going to give his weapons to Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, who he hates and who hates him, but he was going to give it to them so they could attack us, and that's why we had to go to war, and it wasn't true.
Right, it wasn't true. I mean, that was a bait and switch. You and I both know that the project for the new American century was finished by about the year 2000. Right, that was a determination from the neocons that they were going to do it. They were just waiting for a pretext. The pretext was 9/11. And even today, if you listen to the conservative talk from Rush Limbaugh to the religious right, some of the people over there, they're all yakking away as if this is a, quote, war on terror. That's what they keep calling it. But no one does a very good job of putting all the links together. And when you ask them, well, okay, what is the war on terror? Well, it's against people who do terrorist things. Well, who are the enemy combatants? Well, blah, 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 blah. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Blah, 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 blah. Well, is it Islam? Oh, no. These are only extreme Muslims. Well, who are they? Blah, blah, blah. You know, we've got some people targeted, some not. How long is this war going to last? Well, we don't know. How much will it cost? Well, we don't know. How will we know when it's over? Well, we don't know. You know, and by the way, to say, you know, we're going to champion the cause of liberty throughout the world, and at the same time, they, by the way, in order to champion the cause of liberty, we just have to shred some of your constitutional rights. That's all. Don't mind us.
Well, that's to protect us from the wicked terrorists, of course.
Right. So what bothers me on that side of the equation is the fact that a lot of the right, the conservative right, except for a few people, you know, I think Pat Buchanan, Alan Keyes, and others have begun asking really hardball questions about this whole stuff, and a lot of libertarians. A lot of people on the left sort of get the problem, but the only reason they're getting it is because the people perpetrating it are on the right now. If it had been a Gore administration, you wouldn't have heard a peep. There just wouldn't have been anything out of there. So as I've always said, they're getting it right, but for the wrong reasons. And either way, the concern that I have is that the direction we're really moving and why we're really in this war on terror are far different than 9/11. 9/11 really happened. A lot of people were killed. There really is a radical level of Islam, but they're not being as honest as they could in saying exactly what the ties are to traditional Islam, etc., etc. And then the third thing, of course, oil is in the mix. And the fourth thing is the world is sliding into this, what I'm calling a gut-wrenching, grinding recession when we get there. So I'm predicting it's sort of like a very slow sinking ship. It'll sink slowly and there'll be momentary explosions of chaos and other things, and it'll settle down again.
Ah, but when you get into a real economic problem, when you really get into a recession, there's one way out of that recession.
You have a war.
I think they have this whole thing scripted so carefully. They're already talking about resuming the draft and drafting women, and we're just going to have to go to war, and we know what the agenda is in the Middle East because we've read the material put out by the Project for the New American Century. We've heard what William Crystal has said about how we have to take out Syria and Iran and Saudi Arabia down the line. And that's what it's really all about. But we can't tell the American people that. We've got to make them feel that we're there to bring about democracy. Give them this high-sounding ideals like we did with the First World War. This was the war to make the world safe for democracy. It was the war to end all wars. And then the Second World War was the war for the new freedoms, the four freedoms. That's what we fought for. And, of course, immediately then we turned Eastern Europe and China over to the communists. And all those young men who died to bring freedom to the world, as John Kennedy said, you know, what our young men have fought for, our State Department and our president have fritted away.
Yeah.
And that was his speech.
What is so really funny that I always have to run around giggling about, because, you know, and you and I both, I think we have a passion for truth. That's my base, bottom line passion. I do what I was trained to do as a journalist 35, 40 years ago, and that is ask what's true, what's really going on. Not is it politically correct, not is it what the popular culture thinks, but what's really happening. That's what I'm always asking. And, you know, this stuff is pretty easy to find, Dr. Stan. Project for the New American Century is out there. You can read it.
Now, for our listeners, that is at newamericancentury.org. That's
right.
www.newamericancentury.org. I went up on the webpage feeling they must have taken this thing down. They couldn't possibly leave it up there for people to see the incriminating evidence that this whole war was planned back in 1998 by Donald Rumsfeld, and by Paul Wolfowitz, and by Bolton, and by Liddy, and by Dick Cheney, who were all part of the original 25 people in the in this New American Century, the Elliot Abrams, who's in the government today. All these people in the government were planning the war back in 1998.
I mean, and all they needed was a pretext, and that's what you heard. And you remember that, right as it happened, we were let's reverse the whole thing back up. Okay, in the 1990s, we went through the Oslo peace process, right? And for the Berlin Wall came down in 89 on Kristallnacht, and then we were told the Cold War is over, let's get rid of all the weapons and all this other sort of stuff because peace is at hand. We kept hearing that. And what I began reiterating is, wait a minute, the old rules are done, but you don't know what the new rules are. You know, we have a vacuum here. That was as far as the geopolitical situation. And sure enough, all sorts of chaos erupted. But the second thing was we had the Oslo peace process. And all they did during the 1990s is really create a period of no war. They didn't have peace and they didn't have war. And the terrorists began behaving themselves. Because at that moment, they stood to gain a lot just by behaving themselves and seeing what they could get out of the Oslo peace process. But the one thing that they would never do was throw the hard issues on the table, the hard issues being the fate of Jerusalem, final borders, right of return of refugees, and West Bank settlements. Those were the four issues that nobody dared touch. And all during that time, and I covered it intensely, and I said, here it is. When you get to this point, these are four points on which neither side can agree, and as soon as this comes out, the whole thing's going to collapse, and Arafat's going to go back to his old ways. All right, and sure enough, right on schedule, in August of 2000, somebody took them out of their back pocket, threw them on the table, and the thing fell apart. And then the so-called spontaneous intifada, which was well-planned, erupted, and that went on for a year. The following year, almost a year to the month, 9/11 hit. And by this time, of course, the neocons had their plan of what they knew they were going to do, because they talked very rapidly about the radical restructuring of global society along a communitarian, read socialist or Marxist model. All right, this is what these people are talking about. What we have brought over to Iraq is not democracy; it is communitarianism, from some of our leading foundations and think tanks. And we've done shows on foundations before. So all you heard right after 9/11, first of all, they knew who the people were. Even though, I mean, I don't know how you look at passenger manifests and suddenly go, here are the terrorists. You know, and nowhere to go. And if you did know who they are, why are they on the airplane? You know,
and of course, if you knew who they were, nine of them were stopped. They were on the terrorist watch list.
Right.
Fortunately, because of the brilliance of our leaders, knowing full well by 1998, that, and this comes out of the staff report, 9/11 staff report, anybody would like to have the page, I'll be glad to send it to them, or you can pull it down off the internet, but knowing by 1998 that they planned to hijack our planes and to use them as weapons, what did they do? Why they began to decrease the monitoring of people getting on the plane that were suspected of being terrorists. So in 1998, they started, made sure that there weren't any air marshals on our planes anymore except on international flights. They did specifically, intentionally did not strengthen the doors to the cockpits, which they knew they should have done. But the most significant thing was they had a program for the people who were on the terrorist watch list to carefully monitor them and search them. Because these were people who were known terrorists. Nine of the 19 terrorists were on that terrorist watch list. But because they had diminished the level of scrutiny of them, they were allowed to get on with their weapons. Now, why would you do something like that so stupid unintentionally?
Well,
and this all comes directly out of the staff report of the 9/11 Commission, not mentioned anywhere by any of the media.
So there we are. So basically we have 9/11. There's that catalyzing event that the neocons are waiting for. And sure enough, for the first week or so, right after 9/11, you hear about terrorists, radical fundamentalist Islamics, Osama bin Laden is the name that's paraded out before the world. Now, the first time on my radio show we mentioned Osama bin Laden was in 1996, in August, when we were already predicting what we called the future Islamic terrorism that was going to hit the West. Okay, so basically you hear Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein. Now, that's called the all-bomb-and-switch maneuver, all right? Because all of a sudden it was, we got to go get Saddam Hussein, and I kept saying, well, wait a minute, whoa, time out. Now, one of the people who'd been trying to lay some connection in there was Laurie Milroy, okay, to exactly the fact and the connection. And there were connections. Look at the guilty verdict against Terry Nichols right now. And Laurie and Jana Davis have always tried to put some, well, I don't know if Laurie, but Jana Davis has been trying to put some connection between, you know, John Doe number two in the Middle East. And, of course, that thing was side-shunted off. So, in reality, the trail leading to right where we are now, Dr. Stan, has always been very clear. When I look back at how you and I have followed this in retrospect over the last decade, it's really been very clear. And all you had to do was to read, in many cases, what these people said they were going to do in their own speeches and writings. And they followed up on it. And now they're talking about, so there are multi-layers in why we're in there. We're not in there for the war on terror directly, not in Iraq. Iraq didn't attack us. All right, we're over there. The oil is one level. The other restructuring of society is another level. And connected with oil and everything else is part of this restructuring of global society, which even Daddy Bush talked about. We need a more stable base than in Saudi Arabia. We now have it north of Baghdad, where the old Babylon is located. And it will be easier to maintain that one.
But I also think, John, that one of the major goals behind this whole thing is this idea of creating a world government. And you have people over there like Saddam Hussein and the Ayatollahs in Iran and the Saudi family and the dictator there in Syria, who incidentally we gave $1 billion to his father back in 1990 just because we liked him. And all of those people aren't going to want to give up their sovereignty and merge into a world government. So why think what we really want, not only in the Middle East but throughout the world, are people who go along with the agenda. And we've seen Gaddafi, evil as he is, saying, hey, maybe I better get on the good side of these people, who can wipe out, Iran in about 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe I better come on board because I don't want them coming after me. So I think what we've really done is taken a big step forward towards this idea of the world government and getting compliant leaders in the positions of power who will go along with our agenda, because the United States is the major force moving the world towards this one world government and the new world religion.
And they're the ones, Dr. Stan, I have to keep emphasizing this. You know, there are some wacko conspiracy theories and things going on out there. But they're the ones who keep using the term the new order, the new global order, the new world order. There are a couple of other terms for it. Global governance.
International order was what PNAC talked about. We want to establish an international order favorable to our security, our principles, and our profits.
Right. And so then you ask, well, what is this international order? Is it a global government? Oh, no, it would never be that. Well, what is it? Well, we're going to move it.
They talk about global governance. We don't want global government. We just want global governance. And it's amazing how they can use words to conceal their real objectives and goals.
Right, and so all you do is you go back in. Remember what I've always said, the difference between a conspiracy and an agenda. In a conspiracy, two or three guys plan on how they're going to club you over the head with a baseball bat, and they do it in secret in a dark room wearing visors and smoking cigars. Said in an agenda, these people are usually part of the elite groups. They write articles and give speeches on how they plan to hit you over the head with a baseball bat. However, when challenged publicly as to their real intentions, they deny it. But when you wake up in the hospital with a massive head wound, they say, well, we did write articles about that 10 years ago. Didn't you read them? And that's how it's, that's how it's gone with education. That's how it's going in this new global order.
We're going to be back here in just a moment with our good friend John Loeffler. Of course, we're talking about the global oil shortage, the fact that the price is going to keep going up and up and up because they really want to get you out of your car. We'll be right back here and welcome your calls at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, John Loeffler from Steel on Steel. And we're going into the background of why we're at the war in the Middle East, which has very little to do with what the American people have been told and of course very little to do with this idea that we really want to bring democracy and freedom to the people of the Middle East. We are not going to bring a democratic, or at least we're not going to bring freedom. I, first of all, cannot figure out for the life of me why we would want to bring democracy to an Iraq when our founding fathers said America was never to be a democracy, it was to be a republic. They understood that democracies always result in dictatorships and an authoritarian form of government. So, John, why is it we would want to bring a system that was doomed to failure to Iraq? After all, Professor Anthony Tyler, writing about the time of the Revolutionary War, the American Revolutionary War, said, democracies are temporary forms of government. They last only until people find they can vote themselves into the public treasury. The people do just that. The country goes bankrupt, and the government is replaced by a dictatorship, very much like ours is becoming today. So why, though, do we keep talking about democracy? Don't our leaders know the difference between a Republican form of government, such as we have, under law, rather than a democracy, which is ruled by men, and usually by the most wealthy men who can buy and sell the politicians?
Well, but I think they do know, because as we've examined, you know, and Sarah Leslie has done a lot more study on this, is the whole nature of what we're teaching. There's this whole dialectical process now which has invaded the West in terms of business growth, employee training, the church growth programs are all based on a dialectic that was created both in the Frankfurt School and in the Leipzig School, mostly, largely Frankfurt, that was called the Institute for Marxist Research, Kurt Levin and others, and they weren't too welcome in Germany. They were Jewish, they were atheists, and they were Marxists. So they had to flee, and they came to the U.S., and they sat up. And by the way, that's not a Jewish conspiracy. I'm just saying they had three strikes against them. See what I'm saying? There were a few that weren't, but most of them were. And they came and they set up shop at Columbia University and other teachers' colleges and began this indoctrinating program of a dialectical thought, which is really a process of mental morphine, the very same process they use in the Soviet schools, to indoctrinate and brainwash their children. Now, you tell a teacher today that the process was set up to brainwash children, and she'll just blow you off like, you know, this is ridiculous. No one would ever do that. But you don't really have to go very far in the educational materials to find all of this. You can even go to the NEA publications in the late 1940s, where they're talking about changing the whole attitude of American children, getting them to stop thinking as citizens of the United States and start thinking as citizens of the world, getting them to challenge and wean them away from their parents and their churches' theologies and moralities and things like that. This is all in the education literature. You just have to go back and read it in the periodicals. So very much so, they would do that. I had an interesting experience when I did a series here called Worldview Wars a couple of years ago. I did six nights running of explaining how this whole dialectical agenda moved first into education and then into business and now into the churches. And when I got done on the fifth night, these three guys surround me, and they're taller than I am. And I was thinking, oh, gee, what have I said, and do I have a fight on my hands here? And they start talking to me in Russian accents. And he said, you are right what you are saying. This was communist system. We grew up in Soviet Russia, in Siberia. We left after the Berlin Wall came down.
Hold that thought just right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, of course, is John Loeffler of Steel on Steel. And John is telling how he had at one time given a talk, trying to go into the background of the dialectical teaching that is being used in our schools and now in our churches in the church growth movement. And after giving a talk in the up where he lives, as he's leaving after the podium, why, he's surrounded by three Russians, great big strapping Russians, and one of them says, just go ahead and repeat what the man said to you.
Well, he said in a Russian accent, and he said, you're absolutely right. He said, this is Soviet educational system. He said, that's your teaching. We recognize that we grew up in Siberia when we were kids, and we left after the Berlin Wall fell. What we don't understand is why you Americans have it here.
So much of what went on in Russia actually originated in here and was sent over there to try out, and now we're going to bring it back here because it will destroy our people. And there really are people who want to dumb down the American people and establish a socialist system here where you have a massive poor class, you wipe out the middle class, you have a massive police force that has dossiers on every citizen, and they can come and knock on the door any time, day or night, and take you away. And then, of course, we have a ruling elite, and that's why the ruling elite always, or at least so many of them, support these Marxist concepts and communist concepts, and why so many of our ruling elite have been so willing to help finance communism through the years, because what communism, stripped of all its idealism, is simply a system, a feudalistic system of ruling elite and everybody else enslaved.
You know, it's interesting you mention that about the destroying the middle class, because I don't know if you've ever interviewed Catherine Austin Fitz on your program.
I have, but I haven't in a long time. She's a brilliant woman.
Right. She was Undersecretary of Housing and Urban Development under the Bush 1 administration, and she made an interesting comment last week to me. She said, you know, what is happening, the way the money system is structured, she said there are trillions of dollars every year in the federal government that go unaccounted for, that siphon back into the coffers of largely establishment groups, the same people you were talking about, but they're unaccounted for in the money mechanism. And she said basically it's making war on the middle class. The middle class is being wiped out because their money is becoming worthless as they stare at it. So what's happened is mom and dad, especially I look at young parents now starting out in their 20s with some really young kids, and in order just to break even, Stan, they're having to run, they're having to do one of two things, run faster and faster and faster just to come to the same level of buying power because their money is worth so much less than it used to be, or they're backing into debt. As a matter of fact, the amount that these families, I think the average family is backing into debt in the U.S. today in the middle class at about $5,000 a year. And this is not for luxurious living. This is just to pay the bills, to keep themselves going. So either way, they become indebted. But she said, you know, you look at the quantity of people now today are, that are on Prozac and are massively depressed and stressed out and overworked. The establishment likes to pass it off as selfish people just wanting this highfalutin lifestyle, etc. I mean, I even hear that from the religious right. In reality, it's the fact that our dollar is worth so much less. I mean, it's worth 4 cents of what it was worth in 1945. It's worth so much less that people are just having to run themselves silly just to break even. And as we always said, this kind of a monetary system, the way we have it, always collapses the middle class. Lenin knew that, Dr. Stan, that it would get rid of it, and that was what he would use to destroy the bourgeoisie, a heavy progressive income tax, and a funny money system that could be inflated, because inflation silently transfers the wealth that you have in your pocket to somebody else without even knowing it. So while the people on the talkies at night keep trying to insist that the problem is keeping the economy from overheating or underheating, etc., or that we need more tinkering and tampering with it, or maybe we open this valve and shut this drain, or whatever, the real problem is the system is flawed. It's a scam right from the start. And I know Catherine calls it criminal activity.
Well, I fear that, you know, in the next couple of years, this whole thing is going to collapse. There is just no way out. They've got to get rid of the massive debt. There's no way that they could pay off what they promised with Social Security and Medicare. And the only way to do away with the system is simply inflate the debt away, destroy the middle class, and then you start in all over again. But by that time, of course, the wealth is in the hands of very, very few. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here, and then, of course, when we get back, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, well, Roger, we'll get to you in just a moment as soon as we get back from the break, if you'd like to call in again. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, John Loeffler. We're talking about, really started out talking about the oil situation. And, of course, I really believe that they are intentionally going to run the price of oil up. And one of the things that should be so apparent to anybody that looks at it, we have an oil stock here in the United States. It's about 660 million barrels. And it's kept in salt domes down along the Gulf Coast. Coast. And in the past, when the price of oil has gone up, they've simply taken money out of the area. They put it on the market. It's driven the price of oil down. But instead of doing that, which would be the logical thing, why we are continuing to buy into this short market to the tune of about 160,000 barrels of oil a day. Now, that may not be an awful lot when you're looking at the fact we burn something about 20 million barrels of oil a day here, but certainly this would have an effect on the market. And if we started taking oil, we quit taking out and we added to the general supply, we wouldn't be having the problem. But it's very obvious that the administration really doesn't want to solve the problem. They want to blame it on the Arabs, or it's the Arabs, it's the oil cartel, they're the ones responsible for this. But I do believe there's an agenda. It was laid out by the Club of Rome back in 1972 in their book The Limits of Growth, and in subsequent meetings of the elite, the first and second and third and fourth Earth Summit meetings, the first three certainly supervised by that great humanitarian Marie Strong, who along with Mikhail Gorbachev and Stephen Rockefeller wrote the Earth Charter.
Who just got thrown out of Costa Rica. Did you see that?
No kidding.
they were coming up to the Center for World Peace, whatever. The Costa Rican government gave them a bunch of property to build their big world center on, only the foundation, Maurice's foundation, found out they could make better deal if they just sold the property. And so the Costa Rican government said, get lost, you know. So, you know what really people need to understand about the whole thing, Dr. Stan, because, by the way, we're seeing this whole global warming thing raise its head again, especially with the movie coming out tomorrow, which I intend to go see because I love movies like that. They're fun.
No, but I hope you're not going to believe this, because this is one of the greatest scams of all time.
No, I don't believe that. As a matter of fact, environmentalism, it doesn't know it yet, but the real idealistic environmentalists haven't really realized that environmentalism is now in jeopardy, because as the economy collapses inwards, which it is going to do on a global scale, there will just not be that amount of money available to go chasing that. But all of this is big business. You know, if there's one myth, I mean, will I attack the right in terms of you guys are allowing them to shred the Constitution and
hold
not even
that thought
much.
Right there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is John Loeffler of Steel on Steel, and I'm going to let him finish his thought, and then I'm going to tell you how you can get in touch with his ministry and be able to listen to his programs. But John is saying that the average environmentalist is a very sincere, misguided individual who really thinks that he's working to save the environment without realizing the environmental movement is funded by the great corporations, great foundations, and many times the very people who are intentionally polluting the environment, because the solution to every problem that faces the world today environmentally is more control over the land and lives of the people.
Well, so, plus an increasing amount of consumption, and environmentalism is going to come into disrepute as things begin to fall apart. And I get attacked by environmentalists for that, and I say, no, you don't understand. I'm arguing in your favor. I'm telling you, you've got to realize this fast, because if you don't realize it and mend your ways and do some mea culpas, nobody's going to want to talk to you. But right now, the Kyoto Treaty is a football. It's a global football for political purposes. It's not from conviction that we're about ready to fry ourselves, as one of the leading scientists in Great Britain said recently, that the only place we'll be able to live is Antarctica. Look at what just happened with Putin in Russia. Russia finally told Europe that, okay, well, maybe we've seen the light, and I guess we should sign the Kyoto Protocol and get it ratified by the Duma there. Now, the reason they're doing that is Russia has an economy that's trying to stagger to its feet. Putin has spent the last 6 years of his term trying to consolidate his power to stop a lot of the oligarch nonsense that's been going on over there. And they desperately need into the World Trade Organization. So they've given the nod to Europe and said, okay, we see the light. We need to sign to stop global warming, so we'll talk about it. So sure enough, they got the European Union's support for entry into the WTO. Now, don't believe for 1 minute that Russia intends to implement that treaty, because it understands what it would mean for itself as far as economics goes. And the treaty is of questionable value in reducing global warming. I mean, we're talking about fractions of degrees of temperature change, if that is indeed the whole issue of the global warming debate. None of which questions, by the way, Dr. Stan, have been really satisfactorily answered. I can list them for you. You know, the questions that have to be asked about Kyoto.
But, of course, the real reason behind Kyoto is an attack on the economy of America, because we would have to cut back 30% to 40% on our energy consumption, would destroy our industry, would impoverish our nation, and, of course, what it does is give China a tremendous advantage, because they don't have to control their pollution. The underdeveloped countries, which are advancing as our industries are transferred to the United States to them, do not have to control pollution. This has nothing to do with pollution. It has to do with an attack on the American economy. The Europeans love the idea. The Chinese love the idea. The Russians love the idea of destroying the American economy. The only people who, don't understand what's happening is the average American who's never been told the real implications of this, and the whole thing is a scam. And that's why we have these movies coming out, and this is why ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, and the Washington Post all insist that global warming is real.
Right. Well, I mean, not only the global warming, but let me frame this thing a little better. There are some interesting contradictory reports going on. First of all, China will be the world's largest producer of hothouse gases in this decade, you know, first part of the century here.
But she is not held.
But she's immune from the treaty.
Right.
So that's the first thing. Her energy usage already is up 35%. The second thing is, if you read the reports on oil demand, all right, oil demand is projected to go up over the next 10 to 20 years in rather staggering proportions. Now, think about this. All these countries are running around telling all the idealistic environmentalists, we're going to cut hothouse emissions, CO2, while at the same time they're going to start burning more and more and more oil. Now, I understand that some oil is used in production of plastics and all of that as well. I'm not naive. But the point is, oil is a hydrocarbon. It is burned. That's the basic function for it. So we have real innate things. And you're right. The whole transfer of wealth scheme, if you recall, came out of Agenda 21 back in 1992 at the UNCED conference in Rio, the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development. And there were three themes that emerged out of that whole conference. Number one, the U.S. is responsible for all of the world's environmental problems. Number two, we need to ratchet the U.S. economy down to the level of a third world country. And number three, we need to transfer the wealth of the U.S. to all of these other countries to allegedly solve all of their pollution problems and things like this.
That's point 10 of the Earth Charter, and the American people have not yet been told that they intend to impoverish them, to destroy the middle class by transferring the wealth out of this nation. They talk about redistributing the wealth within nations and redistributing the wealth between nations, and that's what the World Trade Organization and CAFTA and NAFTA are all about. But the last thing they want is for the American people to realize what's going to happen to their savings, their CDs, their pensions, their insurance policies, their Social Security. It's just going to destroy them. Why should you have so much when the people in other countries have so little? That's the way they think, except, of course, for the elite. They're not going to be affected by this at all.
Right. When wealth gets transferred, historically, you know, for all the wealth that's been transferred so far from the U.S., the money goes from bureaucrats to bureaucrats in those countries, who then immediately turn around and send it to Switzerland, and it isn't for the good of their people in large duress on this thing.
Are you suggesting that people like Arafat are looking after themselves rather than the Palestinian people?
I'm not suggesting it. I'm stating it, okay? And this happens, almost all of this aid that we've seen go flowing offshore, very rarely does it reach the target populations that it was designed to help.
What's that? They say about foreign aid is taking money from poor people in a rich country to give it to rich people in a poor country. let's meet Roger hanging on the line. He's been here for about 20 minutes. So, Roger, do you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. I wanted to ask, we already know, thanks to the often brilliant contributions of the libertarian other Austrian school economics theorists, that definitely as a long-term proposition, the war machine. You mentioned about the war machine rejuvenating the economy, but they've exposed this as an economic fallacy that it is. So my question, for the same reason, after all, we spend billions of dollars to build this material, which destroys itself and other things, representing economic losses on both sides.
Right.
Isn't that just as true even as a short-term proposition, that just because you have successes in the favored war material industries, it still represents a net short-term loss of wealth and, of course, the increase in debt as well? And God bless.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any comment on what Roger was saying there?
Right. According to, if you follow the Austrian theory, he's right. Wars tend to do that in the short term. But the wars aren't started for the purpose of generating more wealth, all right? They are started for the purpose of transferring wealth where it exists, creating a diversion where needed to be. In other words, if you can get the people, remember the Falklands War, or as the Argentines would call them, the Islas Malvinas, all right? That war was started with Great Britain to distract everybody in Argentina from the fact that the government had totally mucked up the currency system down there. That's why it was. So the wars are there. And third of all, the reason wars are started in this type of chaotic situation is one of the hard and fast rules of any dialectical principle is not only setting two sides against each other, but constant chaos. Because remember those when we were growing up before the age of digital stuff, way back in the 50s, they had these football games or soccer boards that you would buy, and you turn them on, you plug them in, all they do is vibrate and the pieces and move all over the place. Okay, see, and what they want to do is, as long as they can get people hacking on each other, they have the kind of chaos they need to begin moving people. They actually talk about it in the think tanks as being unfreezing people from their positions, moving them and then refreezing them in the new desired position. And only when people feel threatened or they're chaotic or they're overworked and running in circles where they're really too tired to think about anything can a lot of stuff be pulled off. And so in the short term, that is the goal. Remember, the whole goal of this, Dr. Stan, isn't necessarily economic. We have a high level of ideology going in here as well, in addition to economics, of which that's only the part.
And, of course, I'm certain that as the economy begins to collapse, and, of course, as we begin to lose more and more of our jobs, why, it'll be very convenient to say it was all Osama bin Laden's fault. He is the bad guy, having forgotten that Osama bin Laden was financed during the 1980s by the CIA, working with the Pakistani ISI. And, of course, we have reports from several reliable sources that Osama was meeting with an official of the CIA as late as July of the year 2001, after he had already been responsible for the bombing of Riyadh, the bombing at the Khobar Towers, the slaughter of the civilians at Luxor, the bombing of our embassies in 1998, and the bombing of the coal in the year 2000. Yet, why would the CIA be meeting with Osama bin Laden? Then that was in La Figueroa. It was in the Washington Times. We have the article. We'll be glad to send it to any of you who want to know. We also have an article from the Washington Times pointing out that high Pentagon officials said, talking of the war in Afghanistan, we're not really trying to get Osama bin Laden. Well, after all, if we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify this war? And
remember, we created Osama bin Laden. We created Saddam Hussein. We created Manuel Noriega, for Pete's sake. All right. This is nothing new. Frankly, I wouldn't want to be a friend of the CIA because they keep trashing their friends.
Well, let's quickly, before we forget, let's get your telephone number, pardon me, your website out there, and let's tell people how they can get onto your website.
Well, they can get on the website. It's like the name of the show, steelonsteel.com. And we try to do an intense 90-minute show every week. We do charge to listen online because we work hard at getting solid information and putting it there, so it's $6 a month. But for your listeners, we usually open up a little account. If they want to go to steelonsteel.com, they click on a show to listen, and if they use radio for the login and Stan for the password, it'll work for them, for listeners to your show.
All right, fine. That for a month or two, and about a month or what?
That usually works for about a month.
Okay, fine. So, well, that's a pretty good deal. So,
I'm just using the good tactics of a drug peddler, Doctor. Basically, I've always found the show becomes so addictive that people, when the month expires, they go, "I got to hear this,"
Well, I'll tell you what, for our listeners out there, this is really one of the high points of my week is when John does his program. It's always something that's entertaining, and he's got a wonderful sense of humor, and one of the few people who really understands what's going on in our society today. And he is not certainly subservient to the people who are paying him a fantastic salary, because he doesn't get paid for what he does. He is only supporters of the people out there who believe in what he's doing, unlike, of course, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. Some of the finest conservatives money could buy.
I've gotten so you know why we started doing our show almost 15 years ago was because in the real bottom line, I really do care. I care about the country and the little guy, and I have always said I want to sort of lay things out for the little guy so the little guy understands what's really happening, because you're not going to hear it on Rush, you're not going to hear it on Hannity and Combs, you're not going to hear it on O'Reilly. I'm just really disgusted with what was called the right. The right, have you noticed, are all playing as much of the game as the left. And it's a big game, and all it is a lot of fighting and spitting over a lot of non-essential issues, or what I call secondary issues. Only rarely do you ever get a glimpse into what's going on. Ironically, the alternative media have kept things going all during the 90s, both on the internet, and radio. And there's a lot of kooky stuff out there, let's face it. But there's wacky stuff inside the mainline media, too. Look at the credibility issues the New York Times is going through right now. So we now have watchdogs watching the watchdogs to make sure that they're doing a good job of reporting the news. It's been a very hard sell for me to try to look at things from time to time, apolitically, and then to try to tell somebody, either liberal, Democrat, or Republican, what's going on, because immediately they want to throw you in the opposite camp, you know, and put you over there. And I say, no, I think my bottom passion is really what's really happening. And I'm disgusted with the religious right, because they've been marching in lockstep with this whole agenda without asking the hardball questions. Some of them have even been supporting this whole bit about throwing people in jail against habeas corpus just by declaring them an enemy combatant. To his credit, Dr. Alan Keyes has made some rather eloquent criticisms of that by saying, well, wait a minute. If we can just throw somebody in the clink and turn the key and walk away just because somebody proclaims him to be an enemy combatant, he's never had a chance to prove that he isn't an enemy combatant. So that means that anybody can have that charge laid against them, and you'll just disappear immediately. All of your constitutional rights go away. Now, in all fairness, on the other side, some of the liberals have been very aptly describing this as a violation of their constitutional rights. But I might point out to the liberal side of the equation that you've been very busy for the last 20 years tromping through quite a few constitutional rights of people, one of which is the right to bear arms. So if you violated my right to bear arms, don't complain because somebody's violating your right of habeas corpus. You see, what goes around comes around. And that's been my message to everybody, is that the rights have to work across the board, or they don't work for anybody. And in this day of relativist thought, that's a hard sell to either side, Dr. Stamm.
Well, I will never forget being at a very important meeting with a very important conservative Christian leaders and speaking out against the Patriot Act and making the statement that there's not one word about a definition of Islamic terrorism. There's not one word in the Patriot Act about Islamic terrorism. Their definition of terrorism is so vague that anybody who was an enemy of the state who wanted to criticize the government could be considered a terrorist. Well, I was attacked as being pro-Arab. I was being attacked as being, you know, against America, unpatriotic. I mean, how being a pro-terrorist, how could you possibly be against this? Why, you know, there is no incidence at all where this a bill, the Patriot Bill, has been used against anybody but terrorists. And then when I try to list the time, because I actually have all the information, and I'll be doing one of my newsletters very, very soon, about all the things that are there, all the times that this has been used against people who are not terrorists at all. It is being used to go after criminals, common criminals. And yet, of course, they've massively expanded the laws to go after common criminals and use the Patriot Act, and they wouldn't allow me to speak. So this is what we're really up against. When you come out against what the government is doing, you are immediately attacked and said you're unpatriotic and you hate America. I don't hate America. I'm trying to preserve it. And the foundation of our freedom is that Constitution.
Right. And it is not fighting terrorism that is the foundation of our freedom. The foundation of our freedom is the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. That is the foundation of it.
Amen to that.
You're absolutely right. And I'm absolutely disgusted with the religious right after a year. I'm sorry to sound so vehement about it. After working for 15 years of trying to relay this out into the religious right and listening to years of how great homeschooling was, which I believe in, you know, they were supporting it too, and America's God and Country and all this. Okay, well, here it is, guys. This is it. You've been blabbing about it for 15 years. Now pony up to belly up to the bar and put your 2 cents down, and they won't do it. And I mean, and one of the leading ones is Jay Sekulow, and he argues that this is wonderful stuff and whatever. Go, how can you argue that? Because they, what is to prevent the slide? We heard the very same arguments 20 years ago when we implemented a new and enforced civil forfeiture, Dr. Stan. We were told it was only going to be used against drug dealers. Well, it's been used against all sorts of stuff since then. And why these people can't see that, I don't know, but I've become very suspicious of various Christian groups because they're there. And as you say, and I wonder what that meeting could have been.
one of those secret meetings I go to.
One of those secret meetings yeah. But they won't let you speak. And I go, I'm not pro-Arab. I'm not, I mean, you know, this is not a pro-Arab statement. This is a pro-freedom statement. I have argued this consistently for 15 years to both liberals and conservatives. You must have a playing field. I argued it with the right to bear arms. If you can legislate the right to bear arms to death like they have done in some cities, I dare you, try to get a concealed weapons permit in your state, Dr. Stan, in California. Try to carry a weapon in Chicago or New York or something like that. Right? If they can legislate that and regulate it to death to the point that you can't exercise it, they can do it to any one of the other amendments. Look at the issue with Terry Nichols right now. One of the hidden issues that nobody ever deals with is this little thing called double jeopardy. Right? Now, the way they're getting around double jeopardy now is by having multiple counts of crimes or charges of crimes at the federal level and then the state level. Either way, the intent behind double jeopardy has been destroyed, right? Because the possibility, and remember, no one shall be put at risk of life, limb, or property twice for the same offense. And they say, well, one was the murder of federal agents, and then this is the murder of Oklahoma citizens. I go, but it was one offense, and it was one act. So what they've done is systematically shredded the protections that we have.
Well, and I think the thing is, John, that there are people who do not believe in our protections. People who think that government would run much more efficiently if we didn't have that outmoded habeas corpus. It would be run more efficiently if just the federal government could do whatever it wanted to maintain law and order. Or the state government could, and that is the most frightening thing in the world. Because our founding fathers realized that men are imperfect, and that you could never trust men with power, because power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, and my question is, why is it the religious right has forgotten this? Would somebody explain this to me after listening to them babble all the way through the 90s, and attack Bill Clinton left and right, etc., etc.? All of a sudden, they've forgotten everything they were preaching back then?
I will tell you why, John. It's because they support our president, who professes to be a born-again Christian, who was led into the faith by Billy Graham. And if you are, of course, questioning the president's faith, you're questioning Billy Graham. And for that reason, they are blindly following him without ever watching and seeing what he's doing. What we need are people who can think. George Bush does something good, you should praise him. But when he does something bad, you should criticize them, and they say, oh, you never want to criticize the president. After all, he's doing the best that he can. He just has to compromise on all these important moral issues.
Listen, this is the nonsense thing. See, you can tell, I always say the level playing field. Don't you remember? You remember this little incident called Monica Lewinsky? Okay. What was the whole issue over Bill Clinton and the impeachment? The issue was perjury, wasn't it? The president lied. And all the liberals said it was okay that the president should perjure himself. Right, and all the conservatives said, oh, no, it's not, honor, reputation, morality, yada, yada, and everything else like that. Well, George Bush tells a little fibby, okay? And now everybody's out there. It's okay. Don't criticize the president, whatever. And I go, hold it. Hey, hello, time out, guys. And why it's disgusting for me, I could expect non-believers to do it. But where it becomes really disgusting to me is when you have somebody who claims to be part of the religious right, the moral majority, the fill in the blank, and he does it. And I go, shame on you.
Well, we got real problems, John, but at least you and I both have a voice, and we have listeners out there like the ones we have in the audience this evening, and hopefully they'll think about what you've said and begin, hopefully begin to think. And that's the important thing, to break loose from the control that is being exerted over the minds of the American people by a controlled media, all controlled by what I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness. You know, we're out of time. It's been a full hour. It's been always exciting that time goes so quickly, but thank you so much for being with us.
Yep, you're welcome, Darshan. You know, you need to still pray for the president, the Congress, your state governors, provincial governors if you're in Canada, and provincial premiers and prime minister and the parliament. So that's all important. It's not, you know, you can't be anti-government, Dr. Stan. What we're for is a Republican government founded on the principles that it was there, and that's important.
And what we want are leaders who fear God.
Hopefully.
God bless. Thanks very much for being
with
us. Bye-bye. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, John Loeffler is a personal friend and somebody I just love having on the program. I hope you do as well. And I think we have to realize that there is an organized effort to intensely drive up the price of oil. This is part of the agenda that came out of the first, second, third, and fourth Earth summits that's called Sustainable Development, or Agenda 21. And if you haven't, of course, gotten my Sustainable Development syllabus, our material, it is part of a master plan to impoverish the people, get them out of the cars, force them to give up their comfortable homes and move into government or controls communities. They call it smart growth. There is a master plan. These people know exactly what they're doing. The last thing is they want you to find out. Now, you can find out much more by going to my website at radioliberty.com. The documents that would verify what we're talking about, how they're creating artificial shortages of oil and water and lying to us about global warming. Because remember, if they're really interested in global warming, why wouldn't the Chinese communist, which will have more pollution than we've ever had within the next 10 years, why wouldn't they have to sign the treaty and be applicable to them as well? You have to understand this whole thing about global warming, and the movie you're going to see in this next few days has to do with destroying the economy of the American Republic and impoverishing our people. And so this is the time we want to remind you our program is primarily listener-supported. I'm really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs who believe there's a problem or suspect there's a problem. And I will tell you what the problem is. It's a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, because there truly are dark and sinister Luciferian forces at work in our society and in our world today. The promoting wars, promoting disease, promoting terrible, terrible atrocities, and we see examples of that in the pictures that came out of the American prison in Iraq. And don't think it was just a couple of isolated, military police people there, because this goes right to the very, very top, but they do not dare admit it because that would disillusion the American people. Pray for our country. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Remember our website, it's radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day. You can hear us 4 hours a day on shortwave. Our telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. My invited to be with us this hour, Gerald Knutson, and he's a lawyer from Southern California. I heard him give a talk this last weekend down in the Los Angeles area, and I was so taken with the talk about our Constitution, about our way of life, about the foundations of our freedom, that I asked him to come on and be our guest this evening. So, Mr. Knutson, trained as a barrister, never learned anything about our Constitution, never learned anything about the spiritual foundation of our country until he actually began to read. After he got out of law school and began to understand that America was founded as a Christian nation. It was founded by Christians. It was meant to be a Christian nation. The Supreme Court had held this on many occasions. Our founding fathers had made this statement over and over again. He starts out his speech saying this way, when Marion asked me to speak on restoring America's religious freedom under the Constitution, I was reminded of what Tom Anderson had said in one or more of his talks. More than 30 years ago, he equated conservatives fighting each other with two preachers who were earnestly discussing their religious differences. Finally, one turned to the other resignedly and said, "After all, we're both trying to do the Lord's work, you in your way and I in his." Well, we should be trying to do the Lord's work today, and certainly the courts and the public schools and the institutions of higher learning are not doing the Lord's work. So we need to begin to understand how we got to the point where we are today. And I would appreciate if our producer would try to get our guest on the line here, please. Dale, please try to get Mr. Knutson on the line. Anyway, we have a Supreme Court that is anti-Christian, and this is the only explanation there can be. Of course, those of you who listen to our programs regularly understand that the Supreme Court was controlled by the Masons from 1941 until 1971 in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. And that's the last thing they want the American people to know, is that members of a secret society that worship a different God were responsible for creating the wall of separation between church and state. Now, many of our religious leaders know that, because many of the conservative leaders of this country take my newsletters where we talk about this sort of thing. But they don't want to talk about this publicly because, after all, it could be considered controversial. So if you understand that there is a reason why these things are happening, there are people on the Supreme Court who hate God and would destroy the religious foundation of this country, then it's very easy to understand what's going on today. Now, if you want the documentation for anything I say, why, you can always get in touch with us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to provide you the documentation of where you can actually verify exactly what we're saying. But the men who work to destroy the religious foundations of this country, to take God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools and institutions, they understand what they're doing, because they understand that if you destroy the religious foundation of this nation, you destroy the nation. Well, with us is Mr. Gerald Knutson, and he's going to sort of tell us a little bit about the information that he compiled for the talk he gave. Good evening. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good evening, Dr. Stan.
Well, it's good to have you here. So how did you happen to get interested in studying the religious foundation, or the foundation of this country?
Oh, I guess it was after I got out of law school, and I really can't tell you. I think it more came about the political stuff, and I suddenly read some books by different people and went back and looked at some of the papers that Washington and all these people had written, and frankly, I was kind of surprised a little bit. And so at least for 30 years, I developed a pretty strong impression that our freedom comes from God. And if we take God out of the equation, we take freedom out of the equation.
And that was really why America was different than other nations. I mean, there's no other nation there has ever been that acknowledged that the God of the Bible was the source of freedom. I mean, most countries, government gives people certain freedoms, and that's the way it will be when we come under the auspices of the United Nations. But the founding fathers of this country specifically specified that our freedoms come from God. And would you like to get into the background of that concept?
Well, it's really very clear. I mean, everybody's heard it from the Declaration of Independence. No matter what the ACLU does or anybody else, they can't stamp it out.
But, of course, they do not teach that in our schools today, and many of the textbooks have left that part out of the Declaration of Independence.
Left the whole thing out.
Deleted this whole concept that we were endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights because of this intense hatred of God, and realizing that if you could remove that from the textbooks and from the minds of our children, then, of course, you could destroy their faith in our country, and we would end up with a country like everybody else's country, where, of course, our freedom comes from the bureaucrats in government.
Yes, and when you think about it, it's been that case for at least 40 years now. A long time.
Going back to 1962 with Engel versus Vital.
Right. And before that, when they snuck in that separation of church and state thing in 1946, Hugo Black, which is incredible by itself. No, it's really disturbing to see what's happened. And I think anybody can get a book, any basic history, any basic book, and read what the founders said. And it's there. It's right there for us to discern, and it works. The Constitution was inspired, and it worked.
Well, you know, I think that it's amazing to go back and read what people were saying in other countries, back in the 1790s, that they read the American Constitution, as to what a wonderful document this was, that men could come up with a document that would restrict the power of government, where there'd be checks and balances, and there were many people who read it and said, this is the most amazing document ever conceived of by men. But I think that many of the founding fathers didn't believe it was really their work at all, but that God has actually guided them in the creation of this concept of a limited federal government where men could be free, rather than an all-powerful government that can provide for us from the cradle to the grave, that must be able to control us and regulate us and take us into wars and control the economy and provide for our education and for our health and for our welfare, and as they say, from the cradle to the grave.
Yeah, and they said it. The founders said it again and again and again. And we heard that for 100 years after that, actually. I mean, everybody attributed their blessings to God in this country. The politicians, the schools taught it until 1900. I can't believe how it disappeared. Of course, you and I weren't around back in the time of Wilson, but, it is incredible what's happened. And it's a shame. You know, one thing that's very clear is, it's the only thing that has worked in the world. I mean, we're seeing an example today of what happens. Let's say if you found a country on Muslim theology, you know what you don't have. You don't have freedom. If you found a country on atheism or communism, you don't have freedom. You definitely don't have freedom. You lose your... And in our country, we have found the very thing that was the reason that people came over here was freedom of religion, and they've taken that away from us. Literally, they're taking it away. At least they've taken it away from us to say anything in the public square about religion, which is absolutely wrong and defies the very basis of the Constitution.
In fact, if you're a teacher and you take a Bible to school, or you wear a cross or a Christian emblem, you'd get into real trouble in America today in the name of freedom of religion.
You sure do. And if you know, I said back in 1979, it was held unconstitutional for a kindergarten class to ask whose birthday is celebrated by Christmas. I mean, that's back in 1979. It's only gotten worse.
Well, I think one of the most important decisions, though, was Stone versus Graham. Could you tell our listeners just a little bit about that? And really the incredible decision of the Supreme Court dealing with the Ten Commandments?
Well, yeah. James Madison said, "We've staked the whole future of American civilization upon the capacity of each of us to govern ourselves according to the Ten Commandments." Well, the Supreme Court ignored Madison. And in 1980, that's over 20 years ago, in Stone versus Graham, they prohibited a Kentucky public school from hanging the Ten Commandments on a wall, saying the effect might be, and I quote, to induce the school children to read, meditate upon, perhaps to venerate, and obey the commandments. This is not a permissible objective. Can you imagine anything more incredible? And they wonder why in the world the children today are doing the things they're doing?
Well, I think that the people back in 1980 knew exactly what they're doing. The one thing is they don't want the American people to realize that you can't separate God from freedom. And if you do, why, of course, freedom is destroyed.
You've lost it. I am so convinced of that. The only reason you had freedom, the founders didn't say you had to believe in Christ, but they all did, and they said the freedom would come, and they gave us the greatest freedom that ever had. I guess Thomas Paine was an atheist. Certainly in his later life he was. We had atheists in the country, had people of different religions, but we all in one place. It's so incredible, Dr. Stan, when you think about it. In the history of man, you had this group of people that came together at this one point, incredibly brilliant men. At some point, I think in the 1600s, I believe at the universities, they studied Hebrew, so they know all this, and they used to give their final talks in Hebrew. I mean, we just had brilliant, brilliant people in one place at one time. Sure, maybe they were only a quarter of the population, but they were there. And anybody that can look at that and think that didn't happen without the hand of God, no way. No way. It did.
Well, I think anybody who's read the statements made by George Washington and by John Adams and by Patrick Henry, all of these people were devout Christians. And certainly, if you look at the men who signed the Declaration of Independence, if you go up on the webpage today, you'll find out that most of them were humanists or deists, and that simply is not true. You can put anything you want to up on the Internet, but you've got to go back to the original documents, and we can tell you where you can get a lot of those original documents. They are published now, and there's no question that I think it was, 53 out of the 55?
I had 52. But
52. Well, anyway, you got those figures right at your brain. And then as far as the Constitution, it was 53 out of 55, something like that, or 52 out of 55. These were all evangelical Christians, a smattering of a couple of Catholics there, and there may have been one or two deists, but that's all there were out of the 55 and 56 that were involved with signing the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And all of these websites that you will find and all of the textbooks that are written today have simply distorted history because if they can change our perception of the fact that America was a Christian nation, then of course they can destroy this nation. Up until 50 years ago, everybody in the world knew America was a Christian nation. And now, while the greatest exporter of pornography in the world, all you need to do is look at our MTV videos that are being put out all over this country, and people look at that and say, this is Christianity. I'm sure that the Islamic world looks at the pictures, incidentally, which our Defense Department have released, declassified, and allowed to be circulated throughout the world about the torture over there in the prison in Iraq, and they said, this is America. If this is Christianity, we sure don't want anything to do with that. And I believe that they're absolutely right. If that were Christianity, and if MTV and the pornography and the obscenity that we're putting out today is what America's become, and the pro-homosexual position is what America's become, then, of course, we are certainly not a Christian nation any longer. And once we turn our back on Christianity, we turn our back on freedom.
Yeah, it's kind of... I was struck when I listened to President Bush on a press conference back in April when he said, so long as I'm president, I will press for freedom. I believe so strongly in the power of freedom And then he said, you know why I do? Because I've seen freedom work right here in this, in our own country. Well, most of his adult life, he's been presiding over a nation which is abandoning the Christian basis for freedom. And in fact, precluding any consideration of Christian beliefs and biblical teachings in determining governing law. It's a nation which is adopting humanism as its religion by court edict. This is absolutely unreal.
Well, Chris, I think people have to understand that freedom is not the ability to do whatever you want to, because that's moral anarchy. Freedom is the ability to do what you should do according to God's law, and you should be following God's law, not having somebody stand over you and force you to do it. But once you have, of course, accepted the gift of eternal salvation, why, you want to follow God's law. You feel a moral obligation. You really are a different individual. But that, of course, is the last thing they want. They really want this moral anarchy, because moral anarchy always eventually leads to the collapse of society, and then, of course, the institution of a dictatorship. And there really are people who do not believe in individual freedom. They want to control other people's lives, but they have to destroy the religious foundation of this nation before they can accomplish that. Well, would you like to give us a couple of the quotations from perhaps George Washington or John Adams or the importance of the Northwest Ordinance? I think all of these things are pivotal to American history, and they're certainly never taught in our schools today. And I even know many adults who've never heard what Washington and Adams and our other founding fathers said.
Pretty frightening. But of course, you know, we've had a classic example in this generation. I mean, how can anybody doubt the importance of God when you saw Hitler and Nazism, you saw communism both in Red China and in like Soviet Union, where God was deliberately wiped out. They wouldn't let any mention of it. They wouldn't let it come up. And still today in China, they imprison people if they go too far. So, yes, but presidents, you know, a couple of these things that really, I go back and I read them and I think about them. I happen to believe that Washington was one of our greatest, it was our greatest president. I personally believe that. And he said, and let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail to the exclusion of religious principle, which is exactly what happened in that case we talked about in the Ten Commandments. Does that sound like someone who thinks religion is a threat to the nation? Absolutely ridiculous. John Adams, when he was president, said, we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Does that sound like someone who thinks religion and state should have a wall between them? The Northwest Treaty Ordinance. And that was interesting. That was passed, became under the Articles of Confederation. But it was continued under the Constitution. And this ordinance required any potential state to teach religion and morality in the schools to become a state. And as Justice Scalia said in a 1993 decision, those who adopted our Constitution believe that the public virtues inculcated by religion are a public good. It suffices to point out that during the summer of 1789, when it was in the process of drafting the First Amendment, Congress enacted the famous Northwest Territory Ordinance of 1789, Article 3, which provides religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. I mean, and that's what happened. Our schools, even up to the, well, I don't know, up to probably the 50s in this country, you know, in 1950, had religion. They referred to it. But then in the Ohio Constitution, specifically the 1802 Constitution, like most of the other states, my wife's from Ohio, so that's why I picked that one, religion, morality, and knowledge being essentially necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of instruction shall forever be encouraged by legislative provision.
In fact, I think it was 11 of the original 13 colonies insisted that people had to profess a belief in Jesus Christ before they could be elected to office. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Mr. Gerald Knudsen. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're talking about the really the Christian heritage of America and the fact that this country was founded by people who were Christians. Not everybody was a Christian, but these ideas that led to the foundation of this country were based upon the idea that freedom came from God. And you can go back and read the Declaration of Independence, where at least on four separate occasions they use one or another phrase dealing with Christianity, the ideas that are in the opening phrases of the Declaration of Independence, talking about nature's God and nature's law. That came from John Locke, who was himself a Christian. The idea that all men were created equal came from Samuel Rutherford, who was a Scots theologian, that we had a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, it was originally property. That was a Lockean, came from John Locke, who was, and they understood that. Of course, Blackstone had written the same things at that time, picked up from John Locke. Everybody at that time, back in 1776, realized that the phraseology in the Declaration of Independence was unique and marvelous because it came from Christian writers and expressed a Christian worldview. What a shame it is that today most people don't even know what the Christian worldview is all about.
No, they sure don't.
Well, you know, of course, we can go on then. Of course, some of the things you brought out, I thought that wonderful quotation you have from Benjamin Franklin at the Constitutional Convention is so important, because the people who talk about him, oh, you know, he was a deist, he didn't believe in anything. I'm not saying he was necessarily an evangelical Christian, although I think he believed, you know, in the basic tenets of Christianity, whether he accepted the deity of Christ, we could debate. But I think by the time the Constitution was being founded, he certainly was drawing closer to the religion of his roots. Would you like to quote that statement that he made at the Constitutional Convention?
One of my favorite quotes. In the days of our contest with Britain, we were aware of danger. We daily had prayers in this room for divine protection. Our prayers were heard, and they were graciously answered. Have we now forgotten this powerful friend, or do we imagine we no longer need his assistance? I therefore beg leave that you move henceforth prayers imploring the assistance of heaven and its blessing upon our deliberation be held in this assembly every morning before we proceed with business. Boy, do we need that now.
And, of course, you know, what's really so interesting is that the Senate opens every day with prayer. The House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. opens every day with prayer. The Supreme Court opens every day when the choir comes in and says, you know, God save the United States in this honorable court. They have above them, where the Supreme Court justices sit in their chambers, a replica of the Ten Commandments. And yet the Supreme Court justices do not want God to be mentioned in our schools. Why would that be, other than the fact that they want to destroy the faith of our children? And they've done a pretty good job of it. As we see the skyrocketing statistics on one or another form of immoral behavior. The Supreme Court has never not known what they were doing. It was that they had an agenda. They call it judicial activism. How are we going to change that, Mr. Knudsen?
Well, there's a lot of things. But, you know, the most incredible thing, the thing that struck me was the 9/11, when everybody's praying, even the most liberal congressman. Everybody is praying. The president prayed. Everybody prayed. And yet, who couldn't pray? Little kids who were scared silly sitting in a classroom.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Mr. Gerald Knudsen, and we're talking about the Christian history of America. It's something that we have to go over and over again until it becomes such much a part of us. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But if any of you would like, Mr. Knudsen, would it be all right if we sent out copies of your speech to anybody who would want them?
Certainly.
If any of you out there in the listening audience would like a copy of this speech, it's a beautifully crafted speech, and it was one I heard, I guess it was week before last. You sort of lose all track of time here, but it was given on let's see.
May 15th.
May 15th. So it was just about 2 weeks ago. And if you would like a copy of this speech, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll send it to you free of charge. It just has some wonderful ideas and wonderful quotations in it. Quotations which need to become part of you with an understanding that only by understanding the history of the past can you understand what's going on today or anticipate the future. And, of course, you made the point here that 52 of the 55 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Orthodox believers in Jesus Christ. And that was well known at the time. It's amazing how that has been changed today. And our college students are taught, oh, they were all humanists or they were all atheists or, you know, it doesn't matter. They're not interested in the truth. They're interested in destroying a belief in our way of life.
Yeah, they sure are, big time. And it's disturbing because it's been going on for, over 50 years now. Just to watch it happen is pretty frightening.
Well, what we have to do, of course, is use every opportunity we can, not just to talk among people who agree with us, but people who don't necessarily agree with us. This is why I do my radio programs 5 hours a day. And what was that quotation from John Quincy Adams? Do you have that handy?
John Quincy Adams?
The highest glory
of... Oh, yeah, the highest. Oh, right. The highest glory of the American Revolution was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government and the principles of Christianity. Well, President Adams overlooked the fact that the court just cut the cord. They severed it.
Well, because Adams was, as I remember, he was about the sixth president of the United States.
I think he's number six.
Right, and of course his father had been the second president of the United States, and this young man, I think he was he was an ambassador for the United States about age 14, amazing individual, amazing mind, amazing knowledge, but a dedicated Christian. And as he said, the highest glory of the American Revolution was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government and the principles of Christianity. Well, yeah, I think probably one of the most important Supreme Court decisions, which is never taught in our law schools, is never mentioned in our schools. In fact, I've brought this up many times to lawyers, and they always sort of give me a blank look. And that was the case of the case of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus United States in 1892. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I don't know about the case so much, but I mean, the language was so clear. It's in 1892, and they examined. They really took a long time before they wrote this decision. They went through, I don't know how many documents. I think it took a long time before they got the decision written. But as Justice Brewer has said, if we examine the constitutions of the various states, we find in them a constant recognition of religious obligations. Every constitution of every one of the then 44 states contains language which either directly or by clear implication recognizes a profound reference for religion and an assumption that its influence in all human affairs is essential to the well-being of the community. And then after going through many of the state and federal declarations, he concluded, these and many other matters which might be noticed add a volume of unofficial declarations to the mass of organic utterances that this is a Christian nation.
That this is a Christian nation, held the Supreme Court in 1892. Incidentally, that is included in our Millennium Syllabus. If you don't have a copy of it, you want to get it because it contains that complete decision by the United States Supreme Court in 1892, as well as many other important documents pointing that we're moving into a godless one-world government as a result of the Millennium Conference that was held in the year 2000. Of course, it comes with a video and a four-tape set. If you're interested in it, you can always call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. But you need to have these documents. You can go down to your local legal library. Every courthouse usually has one, law library, and ask for the case of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States. Or, of course, we have that available in our Millennium Summit syllabus. And we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we need to remind you that our guest this evening is Mr. Gerald Knutson. We're talking about the Christian history of America. And if you're out there listening to us in the audience, why our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. So, you know, in 1892, nobody questioned this was a Christian nation. And certainly when I went to school back in the 1940s and 1950s and the 1960s, nobody really questioned we were a Christian nation. And then came 1962 and the Engel versus Vitale decision. And then we were suddenly plunged into the Vietnam War. And while our attention was focused on the flag-draped coffins coming home and the weeping wives and weeping widows, why, the Supreme Court began to change America and to chisel away at the religious foundations of this once great nation. They found, of course, that they had the women had a right to abort their children. They were able to change our immigration laws to centralize ever more power in Washington, D.C., and by one means or another to begin to alter the very structure of our nation. But most people did not understand that the Supreme Court was changing our society. And if our society was to be changed, it could have certainly been changed by amending the Constitution, but it was far easier to control the judges on the Supreme Court. Well, we've got Josh calling in here from Santa Cruz. So, Josh, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing on an interesting speaker like this evening and bringing up these potentially controversial issues. So we are a Christian nation, and our Constitution and nation was founded on that. But how it's been translated is into religious and political freedoms. So you have people flocking from around the world to get those religious and political freedoms, but they're not necessarily Christians. And so, you know, in San Jose alone, for example, there's 30 or more language groups spoken and many, many different religions believed in other than Christianity. And they're here in our nation and sharing our schools with us. So, I mean, what do we do in all practicality in today's world? I mean, we can't force everyone to be a Christian. Yeah. And we can't take away their freedoms if they're not Christians.
All right, that's a very good point. And, of course, a point that I made was the fact that it was during the Vietnam War that the people who wanted to change America did. And they changed our immigration laws so that suddenly you could begin bringing these people in from all across the country to create the very problem that you have laid forth. But you see, we could have had at least demanded that English be our official language. But that was never the purpose. The purpose was to create conflict. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and let's go to Mr. Gerald Knutson. Did you hear Joss's statement? And Joss is pointing out that acknowledging America was a Christian nation, but right now, over, for instance, in San Jose, just north of us, you've got all sorts of different languages being spoken. You can go into Los Angeles. I know you live down there.
Balkanized pretty well.
Right, and you've got the Vietnamese community, and you've got your Chinese community, and you've got your, you know, your Hispanic community, and you've got your Iranian community, and you've got your people from, you know, various groups all throughout the world. And so how do we address this situation?
Well, you hit one of them. You've got to go back to requiring they speak English.
Absolutely.
You can't expect to go to any other country, and I'm not going to be running that country if I don't speak their language. That's just ridiculous. That's the first thing you got to do. And the biggest thing we've got to do is we've got to reverse the exclusion of religion from the sector. That is so bad. It's so wrong. And as you know, I quoted Rehnquist on that. He talked about the separation of church and state is no foundation for the proposition that they intended to build a wall of separation between church and state. The wall of separation between church and state is a metaphor based on bad history, a metaphor which proved useless as a guide to judging. It should frankly and explicitly be abandoned. Well, when you've got Chief Justice Rehnquist, and you got with him Scalia and Thomas, who share his understanding, it makes it easy to understand why there is such an all-out battle to keep anybody off that court that might have some belief in God and the original intent.
And I would say to Josh that it was back in 1988 when I was running for Congress that Senator Hayakawa, who was the senator from California, was trying to get legislation through the United States Senate to have English declared the official language of this country. But he could not get it through because there were people here who wanted to create the conflict and the situation that you have. Now, if we're going to have a nation, you have to have a united nation, and you can't have people speaking all sorts of different languages, and we should not, certainly shouldn't be, having the opportunity to speak Spanish or Chinese or whatever language you want to. It's a unified country. You want to come to America, you learn our language.
Sure, you can learn English, and that'd be great if everyone spoke English.
And the other thing is...
Everyone should, but just having everyone speak the same language doesn't guarantee that they're all going to want to be Christians. And even if we open religion in school, they may want to bring their religions from other parts of the world and speak about those in English.
They may very well, but you see, the thing is that we're not teaching the heritage of America in our schools today. We're not teaching, really from a historical point of view, that this was a Christian nation. And the very foundations of our freedom and the understanding that the concepts of America were unique than every other nation.
It's religious freedom that we wanted, but only to be Christian? I mean,
No. You don't have to be a Christian to be a good American. But if you want to destroy the Christian heritage of America, then you're not a good American. In other words, you don't have to be accept the Christian concepts. You can be a Jew, and there are lots of Jews who support these Christian concepts.
Because the Ten Commandments are fundamental to all religions. So if we just talk about the Ten Commandments, they're fundamental to every religion I can think of.
But don't you think that we should be teaching about the Christian foundations of this country?
Absolutely. And we should teach about the Ten Commandments.
Absolutely.
And we should allow religious freedom and not be threatened. If people believe in the Ten Commandments but are also believe in a different religion, I don't have any problem with that.
I don't have any problem. I'd like to convert them, but that is their decision, and we should never use the power of government to force people to believe as we do, but they should have the opportunity to understand the foundations of our freedom. You can have people from China, you can have people from Africa, they can be just as good an American as you and I can.
They
have to understand the foundations of these ideas of freedom that were laid out by our founding fathers. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Josh.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to... I'm going to ask Roger to hang on. Let's go to Kurt calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kurt. How are you doing?
Hello. I just tuned in. It sounds like a fascinating program. I'm going to catch it all and tape it tomorrow. But I did have a comment. You know, in the Bible, it calls us Christians to be wise. It calls us to have wisdom. And I look at the situation of all the different ethnic groups. I mean, I'm a Finn. I'm an Irish. I mean, you know, those awful, awful Catholic people, right? And the thing is, when I look at the ethnic groups, I see this marvelous opportunity. We don't have to send the missionaries out. The mission field came to us. We have this incredible opportunity as Christians to witness the people and lead people to Christ from every culture in the world. And then they can go back to their own countries as missionaries. Real ethnic missionaries that know what they're doing.
What an opportunity. It's a great opportunity, but we should never use the power of government to force them into
that. No.
What would you say in response Kurt, Mr. Knutson?
Well, of course, I strongly believe that the federal government, contrary to the express provisions of the First Amendment, has established a religion in this country. Humanism, atheism. That is the religion. They've laid it out. They've laid it on us. When you look at it, you look at all the schools teach Darwin's theory as an absolute fact. Not a theory. It's a fact. And you and I both know that it's not proven. As a matter of fact, it can't even stand up under the light of day. And they teach it, and they teach that they lie about what the Declaration says. So it's hard to answer the question he's raising, because we've got a tremendous hurdle to overcome if we let this go on. We've got all these people that are literally for 50 years have been taught in the school something that's a lie. Two lies. One is they've been taught about separation of church and state, and second, they've been taught that we just evolved from apes, and that somehow this is a result of matter, energy, and chance. And, you know, it has been proved. Because I think that Behe book, which I referred to, it's a marvelous book. Everybody, any class on evolution should require to teach that. I mean, he destroys it.
That's Darwin's Black Box.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
That's just a great book, great book. And Alexander Hamilton told us the courts must declare the sense of the law, and if they should be disposed to exercise will instead of judgment, the consequence would be the substitution of their pleasure to that of the legislative body. And boy, has that happened.
Well, I think that what we see, you know, I think that certainly reading Thomas Jefferson's diary, he wanted people to be able to be here, and they could be Hindus, they could be Muslims, they could be Americans. But he recognized, of course, that America was founded by a Christian worldview. Well, what we have is a situation where the vast majority of our people consider themselves to be Christians of one sect or another, but that doesn't really matter. What they say is, well, we can't offend anybody who's Muslim or Hindu by mentioning Christianity in our schools or having any sort of a Christian pageant, and so we're going to outlaw that by law. On the other hand, if they want to celebrate Ramadan or the Muslim holidays at our schools, that's perfectly all right. And what you have to understand, if everything that's going on is really part of an anti-Christian agenda. When you understand that, it really all begins to make sense. Certainly people of other faiths can live in this country, but the only reason they can live in this country is because we're a Christian nation. You go over there and try to live in a Muslim country and you're a Christian, you're a second-class citizen. You're a Jew, you're a second-class citizen. And even living in Israel today, which is a Jewish nation, why Christians are never first-class nations, and the Muslims are not first-class citizens. But here in America, you can come from any place in the world and be a first-class citizen, because we are a Christian nation. Hey, thanks so much, Kurt, for calling.
Could I make another comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I think what I said was missed, and I think what I said was really important. We Christians need to use wisdom. God gave us wisdom. We have an opportunity with all these different peoples to go out individually as Christians. I'm not disagreeing with anything you fellows are saying, but what I am saying is see a broader picture. See God's opportunity. We have an opportunity as Christians, if we will, and I've just led 32 people from another nation to Christ in the last few months, 33. If we will very simply go out and care about our neighbors enough and go out and do what the Lord commanded us to do. We were commanded to witness. We were commanded to lead people to Christ. You know, laws and things are wonderful, but we Christians have a job that we were told to do, and in gross disobedience to the Lord's job, orders, we do not witness to our neighbors. What a marvelous opportunity to lead. What if we raise a Billy Graham from Uganda? You know, we have a chance to lead people to Christ and to do what the Lord told us to do, and in witnessing the people from different nations, literally witness to the whole world. Shouldn't we Christians do that?
Absolutely, and I congratulate you because I know Kurt, and I know he's doing just exactly what he's saying, and I wish that everybody was as good an evangelist as you are, Kurt.
But we're just called to do it. We can all do it.
God bless you.
Yep, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to Roger calling again from Pennsylvania. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Our guest is Mr. Gerald Knutson from Southern California. And Roger's on the line. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, gents. Yeah, I've been very profoundly disappointed by the Christian circle apologetics in this recent crisis with the perversion marriages, etc., that comes to more of a head. But I see this as virtually a logical inevitability using the somewhat utilitarian arguments that have been used to bolster, and not expressly, unfortunately, the Christian basis for the law. Now, the punchline of what I had to say, the only question being, by what standard? Not whether or not we have a religious basis for the law. Now, Jefferson correctly pointed out that a multiplicity of law is tyranny. And I don't have to persuade any listeners here that we have tyranny because of this multiplicity of law. Now, the New Testament, of course, says that God ordained government for the punishment of evildoers. It doesn't say anything about legal positivism to force people to do the right thing, which is part of that tyranny of the law that we have.
What's your point, Roger?
Well, I'm really disappointed. Even in Norm Geisler's book, Legislative Morality, he goes into this fallacy of societal consensus and never comes to that more transcendent basis for the law. And so the point being, all law, zero exceptions, is a legislation of morality or procedural there too, and then in turn all that morality is undergirded by religious presuppositions. I never hear these arguments everywhere than when I make them on some radio show.
All right, fine, Roger. Let's go ahead and get Mr. Knutson's response. Thanks so much.
Okay. I agree with Roger totally. It's perfectly silly to say we can't legislate morality when our criminal laws are all based on commandments in the Bible. The theft and murder and everything else, he's absolutely right. But the trouble is we've legislated an atheist morality now, and with abortion, mandated in California. We can't, the public school can't say there's anything wrong with sodomy. We have an incredible situation that is just, it's wrong. I mean, it's wrong. And the other gentleman that said the missionary work, he's absolutely right. But the fact is, if we aren't vigilant in our country, we're going to lose our freedom. We're already lost a lot of it. We're going to lose more. And I think the Lord intended us to look out for ourselves and protect the government he gave us. Why did he give us as perfect as you've ever had in the history of mankind, government, if he didn't intend us to protect it? And we're not. We're letting it go. We've let it go for 50 years.
And I think that the reason that we should legislate against homosexuality and say that, that a public expression of homosexuality is a crime is because God said it's a crime. And that has to be the standard by which we go by. Now, are we going to stone homosexuals? No. But I think that we have the right to say it should not be something that is flaunted. Certainly, it should not be something that is being taught as normal in our schools, because it isn't, because homosexuals die. The average homosexual male dies about 40 to 41. The average lesbian dies at 44 or 45. One in three lesbians is going to get a breast carcinoma, and they're concealing this fact because of what they do, because what they do is against all of God's laws. And it isn't either hygienic or certainly it doesn't condone to long life. And so if you care about homosexuals, you're not going to say what they're doing is right. You're going to tell them what they're doing is wrong, and we're here to help you. But if you don't stop this lifestyle, it's going to kill you. But we have to use the law, to protect society against pornography and certainly against homosexuality and all the things that it involves. And if we don't do that, then we don't honor God. But also we lay the foundation for the destruction of society, because there's no incidents in all history where a nation has gone into the moral decline that we have, and that nation has survived. How would you feel about that, Mr. Knutson?
Well, I feel very strongly about it. It's absolutely incredible. I've seen this in recent years. You know, you can't take a Bible into a classroom, but on the other hand, you can't keep nude dancing, these so-called juice bars, out of a city, a perfectly respectable city. They can't legislate where if the girls, if you serve juice, the girls get up the stage, take all their clothes off, and dance. I ran into that in Anaheim. It was absolutely ridiculous. So some federal judge held you had to set apart part of the city where they could have that. We've let this happen to us. It's the darndest thing I've ever. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's been ever since before I was practicing law. It was there, but it's gotten so worse, and it's accelerating at such a fast pace. And you look at Canada, where that one province, they won't even let you read the Bible and quote it on what it says about homosexuality. We're in very serious trouble. And our freedom of speech is just disappearing like nobody's business.
And I really fear that if we do not take a stand now and just say we're not going to put up with this anymore, if the Christians and the Christian church are willing to take a stand, then we're going to lose America. And unfortunately, as I look out across America, there's a few of our leaders who really are speaking out, but most of them don't want to be controversial. They don't want to come under attack, because if you stand up and say what's right, they're going to attack you. I know we've been through it. I had hundreds of obscene telephone calls and threats and all this sort of thing, simply because I was in a movie that was did nothing but tell the medical aspects of homosexuality. We had over 250 obscene telephone calls, and there was absolutely nothing we could do to cut them off, unfortunately, and we certainly had no rights at all. It was only the people calling had rights. If this were to happen to a homosexual, he was to be harassed. Why, it would be on the front pages of the New York Times, and you'd see Barbara Walters up there weeping away, and all the commentators weeping about it. When it happens to a Christian, why, of course, it gets a conspiracy of silence.
Of course, I went to school about the same time you did. I can remember they had to let communist professors in because we got to hear both sides. Now they've taken control of it totally, and we can't hear the Christian side in our universities, except in a very rare situation. You know, and it was a dead giveaway. There's this Max Boot, who's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, writes a weekly column in the Los Angeles Times down here. And he wrote a column saying the right can't win this fight. We're talking about homosexual gay marriage. And he said, it's hard to imagine that legalizing gay marriage will make much difference in the lives of most people. Certainly it will have considerably less corrosive effect on society than the prevalence of divorce and out-of-wedlock childbearing.
Hold that thought for just a moment.
He recites all the things that have happened. In the, you know, we've been in, entered the law, the rates of premarital sex, out-of-wedlock birth. Divorce have soared since the 1950s. And then in school, prayer's out, sex education is in. He recites all that, and he says it's good. And that's the Council on Foreign Relations. If we ever get a dead giveaway of what's going on here.
Well, of course, people have to understand what the Council is. It's a front organization for a secret society that was formed in 1921. At least the CFR was formed as in 1921 as a front for a secret society. But that's another subject. We've got Ray calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I just had a few comments. I'm starting to feel that this country, we're being reduced to an atmosphere of moral squalor. And we're being dumbed down by the media so much so that it's reducing our culture to the lowest common denominator.
Nobody's going to argue with you. Yeah. I don't think either Gerald or I will argue with you.
Yeah. But I just wanted to say that because I feel that the media is really going at us, you know.
But that's, you see, we are the vast majority. 70% of the media that was actually interviewed, and we actually have this out of the Humanist magazine, 70% of them believe that Judge Roy Moore was right about his Ten Commandment monument, and that judges were wrong. But we have this feeling of being isolated. We're all alone. Nobody
right.
else feels this way. The vast majority of the American people are good people. We just have to mobilize them and
yeah.
get them moving yeah. in the right direction
right.
to serve this country. There are not very many people in the Council on Foreign Relations. It's just that they control
both
political parties,
yeah.
and they control the media, and they control the wealth of the nation, and they control the banks and the education and the great foundations.
Uh-huh.
But we've got God on our side, so I wouldn't trade places with him for anything in the world.
I'll tell you what, another thing, too. I was listening to the news tonight, and Tom Brokaw was making a big thing about protesters, these Islamic, I guess they belong to the jihad or something like that, but they're demonizing these people, and I don't know if it's really, really altogether true whether they belong to Al-Qaeda or they're really terrorists. You know, that could be just something that they cooked up, just to make us feel more hatred toward the Muslims.
Well, I think that they're trying to get us to hate the Muslims.
Right.
They're trying to get the Muslims to hate us because that's how you get a war going.
Right.
Hey, Ray, we're out of time,
okay.
but God bless you. Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much for calling.
Thank you, Wes.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, Gerald, I really want to thank you for being with us this evening. It's been loads of fun. I really appreciate it. I hope maybe you'll come on perhaps to one of our other programs sometime because I really want to go over this subject, and we do three different audiences every day, so it's a subject that needs to be covered by all of our audiences.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan, for what you're doing. I can't tell you how refreshing it is to have you and a few others like you, and they're very few.
Well, that's all right. I hope the number will grow. If they don't, why, maybe we'll just get more stations on board. Anyway, God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Okay, fine. And that was Mr. Gerald Knudsen, who our guest this evening. If you'd like to get a copy of his speech and We've touched on this, but it's really very well done, and we'd be glad to send you a free copy of Mr. Knutson's speech if you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. Or, of course, we have the books, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers by Tim LaHaye, a four-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom. We have the book America's God and Country by William Federer, a must-have. It's over 800 pages of quotations from the Founding Fathers. Abandonment Theology by John Salfont. We have all sorts of books on this subject of America's Christian heritage. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter, and of course we can send you one of our catalogs too, which lists all of the various items that we have that will help you to understand that America was founded as a Christian nation. We have copies of that 1892 case of the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court gave 86 reasons why the United States was a Christian nation, and that's included in our Millennium Syllabus, or it's called the Church of the Holy Trinity versus United States. If you don't want to get the syllabus, you just want to get the case, why, if you give us a call, why we'll be glad to send you just that case, and it's really worthwhile reading, understanding that this was the basis of our law. And, of course, the decisions made by the Masonic Court in 1947 and Everson versus, and then, of course, the Everson case, and then Engel versus Vitality in 1962 had no basis at all in law. And this was well known by the people at that time, but the trouble was we didn't have the courage to stand up. And if we won't stand up now, when we will stand up? When is too late? And so my plea to you is become involved. Become educated first. And we have a 10-point program if any of you would like to see it. The point number one is have a personal relationship with our Lord and understand this is a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield. And there really is a spiritual dimension to everything that goes on in our daily lives. And secondly, understand the ideas, the Christian ideas of freedom that were personified, that were codified in our country, for our founding fathers realized that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And then, of course, understand what the bad guys are doing, and that's where my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, comes in, because it goes into the secret societies that have existed down through the ages, organizations like the Knights Templar, and certainly the modern manifestations of these secret societies like the Rosicrucians, and they are here. The Rosicrucians organized in the 1400s, and yet their ideas are carried forward in modern-day Masonry and within the New Age movement, the Gnostic movement. These are not imaginary movements. They're very real. They're very powerful. Their influence extends to the highest echelons of our society. And the fact that people do not understand what is going on today, and the fact that these secret societies do have an agenda, it's a new world order, a one-world government, and a new world religion. And they're using America's military and financial power to bring it about. So if you really want to understand more about what's going on, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and get one of our newsletters, or go to our website at radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day. We are 4 hours a day on shortwave. We hope many of you will be listening to that. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.